why don't kick back and get raw with us.
From the latest hip-hop beefs,
spazzles,
to social issues that cripple the black community, all from the perspective of a young, strong black woman.
A strong black woman.
And now your host, Rita.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode of According to RP on WJMS Radio. It's your girl, Rita Pierre, your host. And as always, I hope you guys are having a wonderful, wonderful week thus far. For many of you, you guys know that I recently celebrated a birthday, so I am still celebrating, still accepting dinners, still accepting drinks, and always accepting gifts. But thank you guys. Thank you all who took the time to wish me happy birthday and who are still trying to get me to go out and turn up and celebrate. Definitely, definitely appreciate you guys. So before we get on with our show, I do have a few words from our sponsors. So this month's sponsor is Brooklyn Common Space at the Bushwick location. For a limited time, there is an offer for 2 month membership. There's a special deal, 50% off the normal rate for office space at the Brooklyn Commons Bushwick location when you obtain a 6 month membership agreement. Guys, this is a really, really great deal. Like I said in my last show, I've been to this space before. It's a beautiful space. So if you're interested in any co-working spaces, event spaces, rentals, definitely check out the Brooklyn Commons at the Bushwick location. So, you guys know what time it is. It is the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week time.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
May I have the definition?
What does skeet skeet mean?
What's on fleek?
Can you use it in a sentence?
Popping on fleek, Jalit.
And it's gonna be lit.
Major key.
It's time for the Urban Dictionary word or phrase of the week.
So this week's Urban Dictionary phrase of the week is mistake holder. And this is basically someone with a vested interest in a topic but has all the facts wrong. Now, I know you guys have at least one friend who is always interested in something, but none of the facts ever add up. They never know what they're truly talking about, but yet they have positioned themselves to be an expert in the field. So, an example of a mistake holder is: a stakeholder in a fisheries management setting cited a number of reasons why increased transparency detracted from understanding a topic. I don't really understand this particular example. I guess the example is that the person made an ass out of themselves because none of this makes sense. But either way, I'm going to clarify what the definition is. Basically, like I said before, somebody who has a real interest in something, however, this person never has all the facts right. I know several of these individuals. I will not shout you out, but there is always that one person in your camp that leads you to believe that they really know what's going on, but at the end of the day, they really don't. So for those of you who have those individuals in your life and you want to call them out, you can call them a stakeholder. That is the phrase of the week.
Watch it. And you feel big up, big up. All of the woman, them big up, big up. All of the girl, them big up, big up. All of the woman, them big up, big up.
So you guys know that we are approaching the holiday season, and people are out here making it rain on the homeless, making it rain in, you know, the children's centers, the children's hospitals, in the women's shelters. I really want to just take this time to big up all of you all out there, whether it be organizations or individuals who are really taking time out of their busy schedules, taking time out of their lives to go and make sure that people who they don't even know will have a decent holiday season. And so, you know, when Christmas time comes around, it's always so sad when you think about the children who, you know, don't have any toys, they don't have any clothes, and they're seeing everybody receiving gifts. They know that it's Christmas, that it's gift-giving time, and they realize that, you know, because of their situation, they're not going to be having a Christmas this year and whatnot. And I really want to big up the individuals out there and the organizations who are out here making Christmas miracles happen for not just the children, but for the homeless, for anybody who was just in a very bad state this holiday season. So this big up is general because I know my timeline on Facebook and on Instagram has been crazy, especially this week with people who are doing toy drives, people who are, you know, giving away food, people who are doing, you know, turkey giveaways and whatnot, people who are collecting coats, winter coats, people who are, you know, collecting canned foods and stuff to give out to the homeless and whatnot. I definitely want to big you guys up and to commend you guys for, again, taking time out of your schedule, taking money out of your pockets, money that you could have used to buy Christmas gifts for your loved ones and gifts for yourself, but you're using that money to give back to those who are less fortunate than you. So I definitely want to shout you guys out today. So you guys know that with every high, there is always a low. And this week's low is very interesting. So I actually got this story from theroot.com and then followed up on the ABC 15 with regards to this story. But basically, people are going crazy in Phoenix, Arizona. So this story is titled From the Root. Somebody thought a high school play with students. Wait, somebody thought a high school play with students wearing KKK uniforms was a good idea. So according to ABC 15, three students at ASU Preparatory Phoenix High in Phoenix, Arizona, shocked parents and students by popping up in Klan costumes during a performance of The Foreigner. So I find this to be very interesting in 2018 that these type of slip ups are still occurring in public schools or schools in general, mind you. So ABC reports that three students dressed as the KKK walked down the middle of the assembly as part of a play, explained one parent who wanted to remain anonymous. Yeah, I would remain anonymous too if I were you. And this parent basically went on to say that these three individuals were in hooded robes. And so the Klansmen scripts or the Klansmen were part of a scripted comedy play. But apparently this parent felt like, you know what, I guess you could have made your point without having to be in full on KKK garb. And so this parent went on to say, you know, we can talk about racial prejudice, we can talk about the insensitivity, but to have our children put on the robes and assume the character, it's wrong and there's no justification for it. And I agree with you. I agree with you because from what I understand, when these productions are taking place, when the thought of a school play comes to mind, there has to be certain checks and balances, right? Like a rogue teacher doesn't just come out and say, oh, I'm going to just do whatever I want. You have to actually, you know, get some sort of, I don't know, some sort of approvals. There has to be, like, the script has to be approved. The costume has to be approved. Like, this is not just something that you just come out and do. So I find it very interesting how all of us, how these three individuals were even able to make it to the location in their Klan's gear. It just doesn't make any sense. And it just leads me again to believe that people just don't respect Black people. I mean, this was an insensitive move, very insensitive. And you're enlisting the children of tomorrow, the children of today in this tomfoolery. And it's like, who... You know, how does this happen? How does this happen where parents and other children are now subjected to this play where there are, you know, children walking around in Klan's outfits? It doesn't make any sense. And so for me, the womp womp goes to the school administration, the ASU Preparatory Academy in downtown Phoenix. That is who gets the womp womp of the week, because where is the administration in all of this? It is hard for me to believe that nobody that nobody saw this beforehand, that nobody approved this, that nobody checked this. It is hard for me to believe that, especially in this day and age when schools are very, very touchy about certain things occurring and what people are wearing, what people are saying, what people are doing, that the administration did not first, that the administration was not abreast. I think that's the word that I was trying to find, that they were not abreast of the inner workings of this play that was clearly for open to the public, or at least the parents and students of the school. It just doesn't make sense. And it just further drives home the point to me and to anybody who's listening to the story that people really just don't care about Black people. Like, the struggles that we went through, our history, the consistent racism, the current racism, the everyday struggles of people of color in this country, really, nobody's really paying attention to it. Nobody cares, because for you to just come out and allow for this crap to happen in a school where there are children and parents coming to observe a play that you thought it was okay to allow students to wear Klan's gear. Like, you thought this was not going to be offensive. It just doesn't make any sense. But again, we're living in Trump's America, where these things, you know, are occurring every single day. I mean, we're only getting like one or two stories here and there, but these things are happening every single day. But the fact that the school administration allowed for this to go forward, because I know they knew what was going on. They didn't just allow the drama teacher to just move forward without there being any checks and balances. So the womp womp goes to you guys. You guys are educators of children. You guys are staples in the community. You're a school within a community, and you're allowing for this crap to occur on your premises. It just doesn't make sense, and it's not cool. And for that, you get the womp womp of the week. All right, everyone. I'm here with my very, very, very special guest this week, my brother, Fred Pierre. Fred, say hello.
Hello, everybody. Hello, Rita.
So I think most of you by now know that I have at least one sibling. I don't know if I talk about you that much, but
it's okay. It's all right.
People know that I have a sibling. So for those of you who did not know that I had a sibling, here he is, Fred Pierre Extraordinaire.
I'm pretty recluse, so it's okay, man. It's all right. It's just a pleasure to be here. Honestly, I'm very happy to do this. It's something that I actually wanted to do for quite some time.
Oh, you never told me that?
That's because I'm prideful. So, you know what I mean? I got to work on that. I'm being transparent. I got to work on that.
I mean, well, okay. You know? Now I know.
Yeah. Yeah, I keep tapped on it. I like your, you know, your platforms and everything, so.
Well, I truly appreciate that, brother.
You're welcome. And I'm not just saying that because you're my sister.
Well, I mean, for the longest time, we didn't really like each other, so.
Yeah, you see, I think they could tell by the way we're dialoguing.
I feel like, you know, I think we've come a real long way. For the longest time, we did not like each other, especially growing up, because you were always like the sickly one who got the special attention. And I was always like, I always felt like I was like thrown to the side.
But mind you, you did, you know, experience great things in life. You were given things firsthand.
Oh,
you know? So you got a little bit of benefits too.
Benefits from who?
I mean, you got some. I don't know if we're gonna do this on the podcast, really.
I mean, listen. I mean, what I got? Go ahead.
I mean, you had, you know, when we were growing up, you got like little things that I felt like you gained. Like, for example, it doesn't sound big, but I wish I went to private school when I was young.
Let me tell you something. No, you do not wish. And I only went to private school for 2 years. Why? Because mommy was brainwashed by the local Haitians who told her that public school was where I was going to learn how to flip things and sell drugs. When in fact, those 2 years, those very only 2 years that I spent in private school, that is exactly where I learned what drugs was. And that's exactly what I learned, what crack cocaine and marijuana and sex and all this other stuff. Because I mean, I know we're going on a tangent here. What people don't tend to understand is that when your kids are in the public schools, because I spent most my entire education pretty much, except for those 2 years, were in public schools. When you have kids in the public schools, a lot of times they gravitate to the small cliques, right? So it's like all my friends were like the same good kids that went to like church and did the same things that I did. I mean, my crew, we volunteered. Like that was my crew. Everybody volunteered. Everybody was doing like the right thing. Mm-hmm. These are my public school friends. But when you now like extricate your kids and like try and think that, oh, let me put them in private school so that, you know, they don't meet. It's all about the reason that you're doing it. If it was to say, okay, let's put her in a Christian school so she can become closer to God or so I can, that would have been different. But, oh, let me take her away from the drug dealers. You just drop me in the lap of the drug dealer because now I know, you know, what a nickel bag and a dime bag and all that stuff is. But either way, I mean, I get what you're saying. I guess I feel like it's one of those things where the grass is always greener on the other side. So you felt some type of way. I felt some type of way. But at the end of the day, I felt like you got a lot more attention in terms of like, not like things, like people, like they tried to pacify me by belongings, like, oh, you can have this. Let me buy this thing for you. But it wasn't the same in terms of time and effort.
You know, Jesus once said,
oh my God,
that there's a shepherd and there's 99. And he goes out just looking for the one sick sheep or the one lost sheep. Mom knew you were fine. Mom knew you were gonna be fine. Mom knew you had your head on your shoulders. Mom was concerned about me because she knew I was easily influenced. I was naive, and I can easily just be swindled. She knew you were a lot smarter than that.
Well, I mean,
so she was like, I gotta watch this kid a little more than her because she could take care of herself. You know what I mean? Mom would never give me keys to a car at the age that she gave you keys to a car.
I mean, you're right about that. I was more, I mean, I was always responsible, but I feel like I always had to be responsible because somebody had to be responsible. But it was what it was. But either way, over the years, over a lot of years, I feel like we've actually developed somewhat of a relationship, although sometimes you'd be slipping.
I'll be slipping. Don't let her lie to you, everybody. I won't be slipping.
Listen, Facebook is not a liar and nor is Instagram.
Hey, you know, I keep it 100. That's why how I feel. Even before, like, you know, when I used to, prior to what I do now, which is real estate, when I was in ministry, I had a lot of setbacks and things holding me.
Well, let's get into that because so last week, if you were paying attention to the show, last week I had talked about end of year blues and depression, and that a lot of times, you know, especially towards the end of the year, that's when a lot of people find themselves getting into that weird, I call it the dark place. You get into your dark place where, you know, you feel defeated, you feel hopeless, even though everyone around you thinks that you're doing amazing things. And even if you actually are, most of the time you are doing amazing things, right? You're at the top of your game, but there's something inside you that's just like, it's not enough. You're not enough. And then because it's the end of the year, you're feeling depressed off of the two things that you didn't accomplish. You let that kind of take over and it ends up becoming your reality. So it's like when you're in that state of depression and when you're in that dark place, that the good positive things are not at the forefront of your head. You know what I mean? You're not thinking, oh man, I did 10 great things this year. You're only focused on the two negative things, right?
Yeah.
So we talked about that and different ways people can kind of like come out of that. And we talked about, you know, actually making a real list, you know, of good and bad things that occurred or positive and negative things that happened. And so just being proactive and in you know, I guess, overcoming life's obstacles, right? So I know you know a lot about life's obstacles. So I wanted to kind of, you know, talk and or have you talk about your path, your experience, because I feel like, you know, somebody is going to be able to get something from this because your path has been a little untraditional. And where people till this day think that you had a peak, you're just like, that wasn't even my peak. Now I'm at my peak. So I guess to kind of put it more into context, what year did you go to, you started Oakwood? Well, before you went to Oakwood, so we're talking about like what, 2007, 2008, you had ran into some trouble with the law.
2000 and,
It was like 2008, I think.
It was 2008. Seven, early 2008. 2007, I was leaving Florida, still in that lifestyle.
And so 2007, I think 2008, you had gotten into some trouble with the law, and then you decided, you did what most people do, give your life to Christ.
Mm-hmm. I got scared, man. I mean, I was in that booking cell and ran all the way up to the church, man. I booked myself in the church.
And let me tell you, for the longest time, my brother, I mean, he's always went to church, but he was never serious about church. And all of a sudden, like, it was like overnight. Next thing you know, he's a deacon. He's a high priest.
He became a high priest.
He got baptized. He was a vegan, a vegetarian. He wasn't listening to no rap music. And mind you, prior to this, he was writing lyrics every other day. He had a studio.
And not a lot of people knew. At that time, I was actually, I had connections, actually. I was actually moving towards a route of doing music.
Being a rapper?
Yeah. Mm. With Atlantic and...
Oh, I didn't know all that.
Yeah,
now.
Me and my boy actually done.
You should have consulted me, because I would have.
No.
We all have to eat.
It was a lot. It was a bad deal anyway. So
okay, but yeah, I remember that, because I remember it was like one day you were just like, "Yo, I'm about to get baptized," and I was like, "Baptized in what?" Because I was like. And then that's when you told me, you know, about your little experience and how that landed you in church. And the next thing you know, it's like my brother's talking about he's about to go to the seminary to become a pastor. And I was just like, a pastor?
Yeah. I mean, prior to that, too, I remember I went to Cali and I got my evangelistic certificate in a week, because I went up to Northern Cali in the mountains.
Oh, that's right. I remember.
And I spent a week up there learning. It was a very relieving experience. Refreshing.
So talk about your experience going through the seminary now. Being, you know, I don't know, were you dealing drugs too, or are you just using them?
I wasn't dealing when I was in the seminary, when I first started.
Before the seminary, what
before the seminary you like, I was herb, you know.
Well, I remember that you used to get drunk, crazy drunk too. That's when I kicked you out of my house and you didn't talk to me.
Because when I used to get crazy drunk too.
I mean, when you're talking about let's get, you know, so drunk that you go blind, I'm like, I can't take this liability in my house. Yeah. So I remember I kicked you out.
That was one of those points too in my life where I was like, I'm not gonna drink like that anymore. Mm-hmm. Even last night I went to a holiday party for my firm that I'm at, and I just maybe had like a tequila and a beer, and I was just sitting in the corner watching everybody get wasted, but I was like, I'm not really about that life no more.
Okay. So you ended up in the seminary now. Like, what was, like, how are you navigating the seminary? Like, being a kid that was never into the church like that.
When I first went to the seminary, well, first, before I went to seminary, I had to consciously isolate myself from anything that would have brought me back into a lifestyle that I was fearful of, because I felt like it was bringing me down a wrong path, an unproductive path, I should say.
Is that why you became a vegan and was listening to no rap music whatsoever?
Like, I listened to no rap music.
Because you became unbearable.
Rap music I cut out, because I believe that what you put into your mentality, if you're not strong enough, you know, you can really, like, just, even if you're strong enough, you can really just subconsciously, you know, start acting on those things and thinking like that. So that's why even in my playlist, it's like crazy. I mix it up with everything. And then I even separated myself from friends, certain friends. Even I reconnected with those friends later on in life. And they even told me that when I disconnected from them, it hurt them. Mm-hmm. They were really hurt. And for me to hear that at that time too, I was like, man, I didn't even do a real Christian duty. Because it's like, yeah, I want to isolate myself and get better, but I cut my friend off and he was hurt. Mm-hmm. I hurt somebody trying to save me. Like, how does that, you know, like, that's kind of almost selfish.
That's actually a pretty deep statement, though. You cut somebody off to save yourself, but at the end of the day, now you're looking back at it, it's like,
what's a good ministry?
Like, is there another way? Like, would have there been another way to do that, though?
Yeah. You could legitimately call them up all the time. How you doing? Hey, let's go out for some coffee or let's go out for a beer, you know.
But if that person, if you felt like you had to cut that person off because they were gonna, because they could drag you back to that life, mm-hmm. I mean, how else would you move forward to save yourself then if you didn't cut them off?
You gotta have willpower. You gotta have, you can cut them. I wouldn't cut them off. I'd make yourself exclusive to them. As in like, yeah, you see me like maybe once every 3 weeks, mm-hmm. once a month for only maybe an hour.
So but you just said something powerful, though, like, that's if you have the willpower.
Yeah, you have that
most
willpower.
People don't have that willpower when they're in that dark place or when they're, you know, down and out.
You know what it is about willpower, too? I learned a lot about it after I left the seminary. But I learned the fundamentals about it in the seminary.
Okay.
Being as in, you know, we move by faith and not by sight.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you don't see things, but you got to believe in it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's not there, you got to put it in your mind. And you got to exercise your mind. And you got to even affirmate with yourself out loud. So sometimes, like even this morning, I woke up and I said, you know what? I'm great. I'm strong. I'm smart. Mm-hmm. I can close deals. I'm friendly. I'm loving.
Mm-hmm.
Because I want to put that in my mentality. So subconsciously, I act out on it. Then I want to say to myself, if I'm so strong and strong, eventually if I get stronger, your willpower will act. Like if somebody hits me up now and says, hey, let's go do something, I could confidently say no and not care. Because you got to really not care at the end.
Now, you left the seminary.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, you know, people are coming at you like, yo, Preacher Fred, Brother Fred. And but let me tell you though.
All the time.
When I heard you were going to the cemetery, when you actually went, I was like, what
cemetery,
type of
seminary.
Shit? Seminary. Mercy, mercy, Lord.
We all going to the cemetery one day.
I was like, what is this boy doing? Like, why? Yeah. And then when you started, so when we, you know, when at Hebron, shout out to Hebron.
SDA.
French-speaking church in Brooklyn, New York.
Yes, I love them all.
When I started getting you gigs, well, I don't call it a gig, but you basically started getting opportunities to preach and minister there, you know, the first time I heard you preach, I was like, oh my God, this kid is actually good. Because, you know, I'm critical. And then, my friends in the church were just like, yo, your brother is mad good. And so you started to come a little more often and minister there. And I was just like, wow. For me, it was a important moment and it was a proud moment because I felt like you finally found your calling and you finally found what you were supposed to do. Because I mean, prior to that, the only type of Fred I knew was the kid who was always either getting in trouble, not really serious about anything, just doing whatever the hell he wants and never having to be accountable for actions because you had, you know, mommy and grandma, you know, covering up for you or whatever. And so that was a little bit of resentment for me too. But I was just like, wow, he's really doing well. He's going to, you know, actually become something.
Mm-hmm.
And then you leave the cemetery. I keep saying cemetery.
Seminary.
And then you leave the seminary.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, then it was like, so is this the same Fred? Like you can never commit to anything. So what prompted your decision to leave?
This is what it was. When I first became a follower of Jesus Christ, and I believe everybody would probably go down the same type of path, I became very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
So,
especially as I'm Seventh-day Adventist.
Yes, and they're conservative off rip.
Mm-hmm.
So I, getting that, became extra conservative, like to the point where regular Christians were like, whoa.
You know? I mean, I was saying whoa.
Yeah.
Because was like,
you know, like, it was a lot. Especially from me, you know,
mm-hmm.
I was like basically like a Pharisee. If you would read the New Testament, you'd know what they were like. But then when I went to Oakwood, shout out Oakwood University.
OU?
OU. Still got paid my transcript to get my
Mercy. We're gonna work with that. We're gonna work with that.
shout out to Oakwood though, man. It's a great place. Everybody should experience it sometime in their life. But when I went to Oakwood, I got a taste of Christian reality, as in like, I'm meeting now people who've been in church for so long and now they're just like, you know. So I'm going there like, for example, the N-word. I don't know if we could say it on the radio, so I won't say it. But
people know what you're talking about.
When I went to, and not the slur one, but, you know, the one
the
that's
ER
commonly used.
The A.
The G-A at
okay,
the end
the
of
G-A,
the N-word.
The term of endearment.
The term of endearment. What's up, my brother? You know what they tend to say. So I go to the Oakwood and I remember the first time I heard that word on a campus from somebody, and it was like, I was like, oh my God, he just said that. Like, to me, I was like, I thought I was on, and it's very sacred ground.
But you thought you were in heaven.
I thought I was in heaven. I thought I was in heaven. And then so I was like, you know, I'm still going to stay strong. And I was doing the whole strongness, you know, staying in the faith. But deep down inside, man, like, I still kind of hung out with wrong people over there because there's wrong people everywhere. And I ended up getting back a little bit into smoking and drinking. Mm-hmm. And I would say that I think it was like junior year or end of sophomore. My grandma passed away. That's when everything changed there.
Mm. I was. Like, I don't remember what year you were. I think you might have been junior year,
I think it was
maybe
like junior, early junior, or like late sophomore. When that happened, like that's when I was like, ah, I don't know what to think. Like, you know, like I started really indulging in the, like, you know, herb and liquor. I shaved my head. You know what I mean? Went completely bald. And so, like, I started getting into those things. And I started still preaching at the same time, you know, and going out volunteering, feeding the homeless. I had a homeless ministry that I started myself down there. I forgot what it was called, too, but it was a great ministry. And what happened was, deep down inside, I was like, yo, I feel like I'm fake. I'm going out there and I'm telling these people to do something I'm hiding. I don't want to post certain things that I want to post on Facebook. I feel real, constraint. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like I'm, like, uptight about everything, you know? Like, a lot of stress is going on. And so when I left, and also, too, I've seen things politically in the ministry that I didn't agree with. I seen certain ministers doing things that I didn't agree with. And I was like, I don't want to be around this. So I got out, still preached a little bit. I was like, you know, maybe I could still be a preacher in New York, independent. But I was still like doing everything my own way. And so I was like, you know what, man, let me not make God look bad. Because I don't want to be out there preaching, reading, but then I know what I'm doing constantly. And so I was like, you know what, let me just, I'm still going to be a man of God. I'm still going to love God, inspire people to God. But as far as ministering and putting out that image of I'm this, nah, I'm going to put out the image of who I am.
But doesn't God call all of us to be ministers and all of us to be fishermen of men?
Yeah, and there's certain ways of being ministers. Like, because you can minister to somebody by like, for example, I had a client last month. Man, she brought joy to my heart because it was a minute for me, like, in the winter season of real estate in New York, it tends to slow down dramatically from what you're used to in the summer. And so I had a client last month. I was feeling down because I was looking at all what I call losses as, man, I'm not really doing good at all of what I was doing in the summer. And we were talking and we're going through apartments. And as soon as I brought up, and sometimes I don't even like to bring it up, but as soon as I brought up one little thing about God, bam. It was like a big bright light came in. We opened up. We started talking. We spent an hour in the apartment that she wanted just talking. She ended up getting that apartment, loving it. Super of that building ended up taking her son under his wing, teaching him soccer more because his son loves soccer. And it just became a big blessing. And then I realized, yo, like, I can minister like this. I could reach certain people like this. Like,
through your job.
Yeah, through my job. And you could reach people through any way of just being that, you know, mouthpiece.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I feel like even with your actions too, right? I mean, like, I remember one time with Jediah, I think it was by Union Square, and that McDonald's right there on 14th Street, Union Square. And there's a woman who, you know, she held the door, and as she held the door, she was like, I just need something to eat. Like, I don't even need money. And so I walked in, and, you know, normally, I mean, it's New York City. You see homeless people all over the place. People are always asking for money, for food. And sometimes it's like, it's just tunnel vision, right? But for some reason, like, something, like, touched me. So when I went online, I don't even like McDonald's like that, but you know, when it's in the clutch, you gotta get something right quick. I was like, let me get some fries or something. And Jediah wanted like a 5-piece chicken nugget or whatever. So I was like, you know, I looked at the dollar menu and I was like, all right, I ordered 2 4-piece chicken nuggets. Jediah's like, well, for who's that for? Is that for you? I'm like, no, it's not for me. So as I walked out, the woman was still at the door and I handed her the two pack of the 4-piece chicken nuggets. And then she was like, thank you so much. And then as we walked to the train station, Jediah was like, that was so nice, Mom. Like, that was so nice. Like, that was so touching.
Yeah.
And I was just like, you know, right then and there, I ministered to her, yes. But then Jediah also saw like the act of kindness in a sense that, you know what, you see these random people, and she was a white woman too. Mm-hmm. It wasn't even like it was a sister. Like, so just to show like, you know, compassion is compassion. So I do agree. I think a lot of people think that you have to be like, when you say minister, you got to be on a stage somewhere telling people what to do.
I mean, when I was in Alabama, I did, like I said earlier, I did this homeless ministry. Nobody wanted to do it at first. I even tried to get the school involved. School didn't want to do it. So I told my boy, I said, it was Lenny. I was like, yo, Lenny, man, let's get some, let's go to the church pantries on the weekend. Because we're college students, so we're broke already. Let's go to the church pantry on the weekend. Nobody ever takes the bread from there. So let's grab us like 5-6 loaves. Grab big 5-6 loaves of sliced breads. I'm like, man, and they sometimes give peanut butters too. So we grabbed like 3 or 4 peanut butters. All we need was jelly. We go to the local Walmart. Bought 2 things of jelly for like maybe like $4 total. And we bought a case of the water 24 pack for like $3. Went back home, sandwich bags all of them. Come out the next morning, man. I remember we went out there and we were standing there. We was like, yo, we told somebody, you know, hey, here's some food. They were like, oh, thanks, man. We're not allowed to go back in there with it, but thank you. I was like, oh, really? You guys can't go inside with food? They're like, yeah. I was like, oh, that's crazy. So we're waiting out there, man. We were waiting there for like 10 minutes and it was quiet. And then Lenny looks at me and he's like, man, it's not. Doesn't look like it's going to work out. And I was like, yo, Lenny, let's pray. Let's pray about this, man. And we're like, all right. And we start praying. And in the middle of prayer, we hear mad people. We turn around and it looked like a flock of people just coming out, swarming towards us. We're passing out the bread and we're talking to them, And then we're like, cool, cool. And I told them, I'm going to come back next week, guys. And I didn't even tell them about God. I just asked them who they were. What's your name? How you doing? How? You didn't even ask them how you got here. Just, you know, where you were native from. Went back. Next week, came back, did it again. It was cool. Went back, third week, came back. Third week, I remember because when I came that third week, it was more people. And they said, you know what? We didn't think you were going to keep coming every week and every week. We thought you were just going to come that week and just that'll be it. But, man, we love it. Every week we started coming, they started waiting there before we even got there. And they would finish their sandwich and they hang out with us, chat. To the point now where the place, the homeless shelter place, got mad and called the police and told us, oh, we can't be on their side. So we're like, it's okay. We crossed over to the other side of the street, passed out sandwiches. And the police, they came and they were just like, they want to move us, but they see what we're doing. And they're like, all right, well, these guys ain't doing nothing wrong. They're really just giving people food. Like, we can't put some away. And so it was like, it was an amazing experience with that. The whole matriculation through Oakwood, I believe I went through it, and everybody believed it was a high peak, and it was a high peak in my life, but in life, we always have highs and lows. And it was, for me, more like I needed to get to know who God was, I needed to get to know who myself, who I am as myself, and other people, how to interact with other people. Even a minister there, shout out to Dr. James Doggett Sr., he taught us in the temperance class about temperances, of how to deal with them. And that taught me how to deal with people. Like, now people are like, a lot of people are like, how do you deal with this client? Or how do you deal with this person and their temperament? I'm like, I was taught. So now I could know how to deal with an a-hole, you know, and take him and love him and not look at him as an a-hole, even though he's an a-hole. You know what I'm saying? And so that was the beauty about it. And that's what I liked about going through Oakwood. And then after Oakwood, I ended up coming back to New York. And even when I was at Oakwood, at the end of that high peak, the low peak was getting dark, you know? And I was like, man, I can't be out here because I don't got no job. I'm not going to school. I'm bumming it. I'm coming back to New York. At least I'll work and live with my mom. Came to New York, worked. I was working a lot. Went back to my old grocery job. And I know this might be weird, but I feel like in my purpose, in life, there is a purpose for me. Somehow, eventually, I'm going to bump into music again. Because even when I went down to Oakwood, I bumped into many artists there. Or many students there who were doing music. And now they're big-time artists now. Like, you go on Instagram, they have millions of followers. One of them, Sado Divado from Africa, he went to school with me. We was in class together, man. He left Oakwood, and now he's like the Drake of Africa, you know? And so, like, when I was up here, I got into music again. And so, like, I got a little group. I started doing management because I didn't want to be a rapper anymore. I felt like, yo, I'm getting old, you know? So let me manage these guys. Started doing management, and I created my own group. Tried to get them a few gigs, but they weren't dedicated. Got them studio time and stuff. But then on my managing side, I was still working it up. Was able to see phenomenal people. Redman, shout out to even JB, Alan Ritter, who produced a couple of Drake's albums. And so I got to, you know, be around those people. But I was still feeling like, yo, there's something missing, like monetary especially. And then I was at back in my dead-end job, ended up leaving the music thing alone because those guys were undedicated. And then so when I started working as a cashier. Mind you, it was a regular 9-to-5, dead-end job. But looking back at it now and listening to what some of my mentors told me, you always got to look at the positive in things. Mm-hmm. And so even though it was a dead-end job, it was a job, but it helped me with my people skills because I'm at a register and people are just popping up to you every second. You got to be on your P's and Q's. You got to be nice. You got to smile constantly. Mm-hmm. Me, I genuinely smile. I'll look at somebody and I smile for no reason. But I had to be on my P's and Q's just to be able to answer any question friendly, correctly, fluently. And so that's what I appreciated about that job because it was like it prepped me for real estate. So now when I got into real estate, meeting people face to face wasn't so, you know, like I didn't get anxiety from it because I was already used to mean people at a grocery store.
And I think that's important to show the correlation because I feel like a lot of times when people, you know, unfortunately are, you know, get to the low point, right? Like you have a lot of people who are working great jobs that ended up getting, you know, laid off because of the economy or students who, you know, were in school and then couldn't find a real job or whatever the case is. And then now they're like, man, I got to go work at Walmart or I got to go work at Chick-fil-A. And
or
so like, so a lot of times you'll have people who are just like, well, those jobs are not real jobs. And so they'd rather just be broke. Or homeless or living with parents than to take jobs like those because they feel like those are like, you know, meaningless jobs.
Yeah.
But it's interesting to see how it's true when you really think about it, when, you know, because I remember that job. I was just like, Fred ain't never leaving that job.
Yeah, everybody told me that.
He's going to be there forever.
Yeah.
And I feel like
even
they
the
weren't,
boss said that.
Yeah, and I feel like they weren't even really, like, they weren't compensating you the way you needed to. Because it was a small, you know, it wasn't that large of a chain, but. But it's interesting to see, though, like how you can take that experience of being a cashier, something that some people would be like, oh, that's a nothing job. Mm-hmm. And you see how you ended up like honing in on certain skills, particularly people skills, and translating that to where you are now, where it's pretty much customer service.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, in the journey of life, like, man, even people will let you know. Like, I feel like God will speak through people without them even realizing it. Because even when I was at that job, people were like, you're not supposed to be here. Customers would be like, you're not supposed to be here. You're supposed to be in sales.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, really? They're like, yeah. I was like, I didn't even try to sell you anything. I was just talking to you, you know? All the time, I would call on the phone. Like, I'm not calling on the phone. When they would call the job at the store, the cashiers were responsible for answering the phone. So not the secretary, the cashier. So I would answer the phone. Hey, this is Fred Pierre from South Tomato. How may I help you? Every time I would talk on the phone, this one woman would say, Fred, you need to be on the radio or you need to be somewhere else because your voice, the way you speak, it's like, it's not for you. I'm like, yeah, I know. I'm going to be doing this. I'm going to be doing that. But she always used to check on me too and be like, well, what are you going to do it? You're going to do it. And so it's like, even those like jobs, like you just got to appreciate, look at the good of it, you know, look at it like getting a little bit of money and getting people skills, but just also know that you want more, you know? But like after, well, right when I actually decided to do real estate maybe a year before I even got out of my old job. It was on my mind. I told myself I wanted to do it, but I didn't act on it. Or also, I didn't tell myself enough that I wanted to do it. I just said it once in a while. And then when it started getting more closer to the time that I was leaving, even though I wasn't conscious that I was going to be leaving, I felt the anxiety of me needing to leave. And so I kept telling myself, yo, I'm going to be out. I'm going to be leaving. And then when I made it public and told the job managers, bosses were telling me I was crazy. They were like, nah, you're not going to make no money. Yo, you should stay here. They didn't even offer me a raise, mind you. They're like, you should stay here. Everybody loves you. I'm like, still, it doesn't, even if they tried to pay me more, I felt like the time that I spent there, you had your chance. And that now it's too late. Even if you tried to offer me more, it's like, I want to do something else. I want to leave here, because it wasn't like I wasn't committed, because you really don't want to be committed to something like that, like in that position, unless that's for you, because people are sometimes specifically for that. I felt like, yo, it's time. Mm-hmm. I need more. I can't die here. Like, and when people, and this used to be like looked at in a weird way, but I look at it now in a positive way, when 50 Cent used to say, get rich or die trying. Mm-hmm. And it's a fact. Why you, you know what I mean? Unless you're really one that's only embrace happiness, which I truly believe everybody should do, get rich or die trying. Because, you know what I mean? If I get rich, I could take care of my fam.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And if I died trying, at least I died trying going after a purpose. And that was to at least find financial stability and even, you know, mental stability. So the bosses never really kept telling me, job, you know, don't do real estate, da-da-da, do part-time. I was like, no, I'm doing it. I saved up money, and then I quit my job. I remember when I quit. They didn't want me to quit. They were like, no, you're not quitting. They even told me that. They're like, you're not quitting. I'm like, yeah, I am. It was bad. It was a bad breakup. And
but now that you're in a place where it's, I mean, so I don't think I knew that you wanted to do real estate. I don't think you ever vocalized that to any of us in the family, at least. Mm-mm. Because for the longest time, we were actually on like high alert, because we felt like you were about to just like, I don't know, die, or we'd find your body at the bottom of the Hudson at any point, because we didn't really know what was going on with you. We knew you were in a dark space, and you, you know, you separated yourself from everyone, but nobody really knew what was going on. So we, obviously being Haitian especially, came up with all sorts of like, you know, thoughts of what was going on, to the point where, I mean, to be very honest, it was one time like I literally, like I sat, and I don't even cry, like I sat at my desk because I'm like, something's going to happen to this kid, like somebody's about to kill him, because I felt like you were in a space and you just weren't letting anybody in.
I feel like I don't think if somebody would have killed me, they would have maybe harmed me, if that. I was afraid that more of the drugs would have got done something to me.
Well, that's what we were all worried about, to be honest, because we were just like, and I remember that day I sat at my desk and I had gotten a call and I was just like, this boy's about to die. Like, I felt like you were going to die, to be honest. Like, I felt it in my bones. And like, out of nowhere, I was at my desk and I started crying.
Yeah.
But
I mean, there was a dark period. There was that period because during the time of me at Cop Tomato, there was a time me and Mom had a... It was funny, too, because it was like one night I was working. I wasn't working. I went and helped somebody move. Came home late. Mom spazzed on me thinking I was out doing something. And I was like, you know what? She's like, be out. I was like, all right, I'm out. I ended up moving to the projects. Wasn't a great idea. Moved in with... I never did it, so I'm going to do this. Put that as a disclaimer. But moved in with a heroin addict. Didn't even know he was a heroin addict. Moved out a week later because I felt like I was going to die every single night I was in there. Moved in with a woman. She was cool, real, real cool. Stayed with her for almost like 2 or 3 months. Mm-hmm. She got weird, moved out. But then in that time, I started doing some things that I can't mention right now.
No, you know, we're not going to talk about everything.
So,
But that's the thing. You're not mentioning it, but trust me, everybody knew or felt like what was going on.
I was in some activities that I wasn't supposed to...
And so we were all scared for you, but I will say that at that point, you know, when you had detached yourself from everybody, I think it was one of those things where, you know, everybody was monitoring Facebook to be like, because we know we're going to find something out on Facebook at least. Mm-hmm. And I think it was something you posted. I think it was right before the post about the real estate license. But I know when I saw the real estate license post, I'm like, wait, you were studying. Wait, one, you wanted to do real estate. Two, you took a real estate exam. And three, you passed it. And now you're like, it was just one of those things where it's like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Like, but I was just so happy to see that, wait, he's been working towards something, even though we didn't hear from him.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that was, I think, something that everybody was happy about. And then to hear that you're doing so well in the real estate. And I'm like, Fred is a salesperson, to be honest. Everybody likes him. He knows how to talk everybody's, you know, to talk everybody's ear off. He knows how to charm them. And so it also became one of those things where it's like, oh, let me see how long this is going to last.
Yeah.
But, I mean, so far it seems like you're doing great.
About we're in December, right?
Yeah.
Next month would be the mark of when I had quit my job. mm-hmm. and went into real estate. So it would have been a full year. But yeah, like prior to that, I mean, like you were saying, I was in a dark space. I was not living at home. I was thinking I was Pablo Escobar.
I mean.
And there was a high at that point, and then it got low. And that's when I ended up moving back in with mom. Mm-hmm. And then it was at that point where I was like, you know what? If I'm going to sell anything, it's going to be homes or apartments. I want to make money like that. Like, I don't want to make illegal money anymore. Mm-hmm. And so I ended up studying the real estate course. And I studied hard, bro. I studied hard. I watched YouTubes. I went to the classes.
You were a proud graduate at YouTube University.
Yo, bro, I was on it, man. On it, on it. To the point where even people in the classroom were like, yo, you know, like, help me out, you know. And so I ended up passing the class in like 3 weeks. I made sure I saved up enough for that like 3 weeks. Made sure I put my taxes in so that they would come normally right when that my check was done. And they did come. And I remember, yo, like, just, like, waiting for my real estate license. Because I passed the test. I knew it was going to be easy. I knew because I'm good at books. In college, I was deanless, honor rolls. Like, I'm
which was very surprising because I was like, you pretty much, like, failed elementary, middle school, and high school.
This is the thing with people. If people don't apply themselves, they're not going to get anything. I wasn't applying myself in school. But if I did, I would have flew. Like, it would have been fine. Like, math is just formula. Learn formulas, you Gucci. Even though everybody's not great with it, just remember the formulas, you're good. And so when it came to the school part, I knew the school part was simple. I knew I had to get it out the way and then get into the field. And it was rough, though, because you're not really doing anything. You know, first 3 weeks class, after that you're just doing training. You're not learning nothing. I mean, you're not, like, making anything monetary. Your friends that you borrowed money from are starting to be like, yo, what's up? You know, mom's getting tired of
because they think you have a job.
Yeah, they're like, oh, you're going every day. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not making anything. I'm really only training, like, you know, for like the first 2-3 months. So, and then after that, when you go live, which happens after you get your license online, you know, to advertise, that's like, it's only until then you really can start making money. Mm-hmm. So you can make, like, you can be in the industry for like 4 months straight and not make money because you have to go through those preliminaries. And so I even remember, like, even like when the day when I got my license, when it's posted online, yo, I cried so hard in the shower because I was like, yo, thank God, now I can go out and get money. Like, it's hard. Like, I'm about to give up because I'm not even there yet. But I kept pushing. I'm waking up early and going, you know, not listening. And that's the biggest thing, too, not listening to what everybody else says, because people will be happy for you, but if they don't start seeing things, they little by little, they lose faith. Mm-hmm. Even to the point where, like, and I love my mother, but she even one day would question me, was like, yo, you're not making money. Like, what are you doing? And I'm just like, no, I'm going to get it. I'm just started. I got to get it. And then eventually she even got it, too, because, like, there were times when I was like, yo, I'm sad. And my mom's like, you just started. Not that you're right. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, like, in the beginning it was rough. You just grinded. And then when you finally get your first deal in, you're like, you know, finally, money, cushion.
Dinero.
Yes, moolah. Let me put it in my account and pay everybody off for that. Oh, and so, but to me it was more like, I did it, Fred. Mm-hmm. You did it. People at your job said you couldn't do it. You did it. Let's get another one. Let's see if we can get another one. And then, bam, you get another one. You're like, wow, I got me two now. Yo, this is kind of easy. Let me go get another one. Bam, you get third week. You close another deal. You're like, wow. Now you're on Facebook. Like, you don't want to be boastful, but you want to be like, hey, everybody. Like,
but it's one of those things, like, you know, and that's where I guess there'll be another show about social media and, you know, boasting and sharing. And all. You do have to be humble, but I think there's a fine line definitely with that, but I feel like as I'm getting older, the one thing that I don't do is I don't share my wins or I don't, you know, celebrate myself publicly enough. And I think that there's nothing wrong with it. It's just the way that you do it, right? Mm-hmm. It's just the way that you have to do it when you go out there and say, yo, guys, sold my first house or sold my second house or whatever the case is. I mean, it serves several purposes. One, you're advertising to people that you actually are able to do this. Mm-hmm. And two, you're letting people know that, like, you know, you don't suck. Like, you know, and you're out here doing stuff. Yeah. You're not just, you know, because everybody likes to say they do real estate. Mm-hmm. But who's really doing real estate?
Who's really out there? Yo, it's really out there. It's a grind. You know, it's a grind. Because I've seen this in the industry, I've seen at least 30 people come and go already. Mm-hmm. You know, probably even more. Yeah. You know, I mean, just quit and go back to where they were. But it's like, that's where I was speaking about earlier, where it's like, you got to exercise your mind and confidence where you're like, I can do this. Mm-hmm. I got this. I'm strong. I'm able to do it. Listen to motivational speakers like Eric Thomas. Shout out Eric Thomas. He came to Oakwood once and he spoke, and now he's a great, great speaker. Like, I listen to him. I don't even listen to Tony Robbins. I listen to him because he's more relevant to me. And so it's like, you've really got to like believe in yourself.
And I think that that's really where the key is, right? But I guess, you know, as we're going to be wrapping up soon, like what, how do you exercise that faith? And how do you exercise that mantra of believe in yourself when you're in a dark space?
First, if you're in a dark space, I would first not chill with anybody who is like that too. You know, who's like, there's a guy I know. Like me and my friend, one of my friends, named Winnie. Shout out Winnie. Yeah, I know he's probably gonna listen to this. He lives in Staten Island, and me and him, we have a mutual friend in Brooklyn, but we don't go there all the time because we're like, he's so negative that it's draining. Like, and it's not him; it's his roommate that's negative. So we'll go to our friend's house, but his roommate's so negative that we're just like, if he's there, we're not gonna show up.
So you know, eradicate
negativity.
Okay.
And input positivity, as in like listen to like, for example, even if it's like hip hop music, like for example, like Big Sean. A lot of his songs are very inspirational because he's not like a gangster. So he has to put out something. So he puts out more better music. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So I'll listen to Big Sean, or I'll listen to Eric Thomas, and then he'll feed me like, you know, nuggets of like wisdom for me to keep going. And then it gets to yourself where you got to be like, you know what? Like, I'm great. I'm pretty. Mm-hmm. I look good.
So even when you don't feel like saying you're great, you should still be up in that mirror talking
about
I'm great.
You got to be up in that mirror. You got, and it's good to acknowledge the lows. You know, you can acknowledge because it's natural.
And then, you know, but I feel like trials and tribulations a lot of times often come to make you strong too. So
yeah, but you really got to like, you got to like talk to yourself, because if you don't say it to yourself, who else is gonna say it?
That is true, and I say that all the time.
You know, people won't say it to you until you really grind in. Oh, Fred, you're doing good. Mm-hmm. You're great, Fred. You're so charming, but.
Where was all that energy?
Exactly. There was no energy before until you had to. You have to charge yourself. Yeah. It's like you're like a charge. You have to charge yourself up and come into a place and illuminate the place. It's almost like it's like a form of meditation, inspiring yourself, just like with prayer. Like for example, when here comes my seminary talk. When Jesus went to the mountaintop, he was at the mountaintop just like Moses, but he was up there praying for a long time. And when he came down, he had such a glow that the demons ran out, right? Mm. So it shows that like he was charging himself up. And when he came down, that no matter, because when he came down from the mountain, the next thing he met was the demon boy who had legions in him, and he casted him out. He was charged up. So if it's like you want to enter, and when I enter into my office, sometimes people think I'm high. And it's like, nah, boy, I'm ready. I'm amped. I'm about to get this money. We're about to meet people. We're about to put
people on
homes.
About to pay Rita's bills.
And then you gotta put in both aspects. And this is what I like to do. Because like, I could be like, yeah, I'm getting this money, but I'm helping people not be homeless. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. I take better pride in getting you a home. You're not home. Your kid got somewhere to stay. You said your son has a bigger room. He's happy. That's bigger than a paycheck to me. You know what I'm saying? Because now I could, when I meet my next client and they're like, oh, how is this thing? I'm like, I did this. My last client told me that, man, her son loves the place. In their mind, now they're like, oh, wow, your last client's really satisfied with your work. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, you really got to infuse it in yourself. You got to be confident. You got to tell yourself, I'm great. I'm a teacher. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like if you're teaching in school, I'm a teacher. I'm a smart teacher. I know my mathematics. I can teach these children.
Break it down. You have to break it down. It's true, though. It's in those little things, I think, that's where you find your strength. And so I will say, though, I don't think I've ever known this side of you. And so, like, as you being an adult now and moving forward, I'm just like, wow, like, you know, I feel like oftentimes, and maybe it's because of the experiences that you've been through, that have caused you to like really be, you know, the way that you are now. But it's like, wow, like, you know, he's not as bad as we thought he was gonna be. you know?
It's and just now the experiences of life, you know,
yeah,
the journey
of
life.
It's more like I'm like, he's actually doing things and you know, he's out here motivating people. Because the one thing you did do when you used to preach is actually motivate.
Yeah.
And I would sit there and I'm like, I just received a word from my brother.
Yeah.
Like, what?
The crazy thing is people still tell me that to this day. Like in my office, they're like, yo, you just got me amped and ready to do this. Leroy, he's just blowing up my mouth line now because we're working on a big project together for real estate. He's like, man, Fred, I'm getting into real estate. I'm like, I already know he's great in sales.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, Leroy, you'll be fantastic in real estate. And I was talking to him about it. And he's just like, Fred, man, you just make me, you gave me amp to do it. And it's like, that's what we're really here for. Like, you know what I mean? We got to like, iron sharpens iron, you know,
motivate each other.
We
got to
motivate each other, guide us in the right direction. There's too many people in this world, you know, beating down on each other verbally.
That is true.
You know, there's too much negativity in the world. So why even be a part of that? Like, just push out more positivity and just tell people to do good things.
And on that note, thank you so much for taking this time to be on this show. It's one of those things where it was like in the clutch and I'm like, oh my gosh, my guest is not able to be here again today.
Mm-hmm.
Who am I going to get? Because, I mean, I did a solo episode last time, but I don't, you know, people are listening every week. And although I would hope that they are tuning in to listen to me, but sometimes you do want to, you know, switch things up a little bit, get some other perspectives out there, and, you know, talk about real issues. Because as you know, that's what I'm really about when it comes to the show, talk about things that people don't either want to talk about or things that are just too hurtful to talk about, like your life experiences. I'm sure you had to relive some of the experiences just talking about it today.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it wasn't necessarily the best. I mean, when we start talking about grandma, I didn't know if I was going to be able to pull it together, but, you know. But I definitely appreciate you actually taking the time out to make your way to me so that we could do this episode together. And hopefully...
Because I'd be hella busy.
You'd be
lately.
Yes.
It's weird. Yes. Like, you'd be thinking I'd be fronting. And I'm like, no, guys. It's not the old me. I'm
You're
busy.
Not just chilling on the block somewhere.
Nah, not chilling on the block, man. I'm running up the block to sell somebody an apartment. I'm running back down the other one.
But I really hope that in the future we'll definitely be able to come back and talk about some other things. Because I feel like there's a lot of topics that we as siblings could definitely, you know, talk about our experiences and share and whatnot. But as opposed, I mean, well, when it comes to today at least, we're going to have to wrap it up. Because I know you have somewhere to go. You've been checking your phone all
I got to submit an application, man. I can try and make this girl get an apartment. I can't let her be home depending on me.
But thank you so much again for coming and sharing your knowledge. Definitely, definitely appreciate it. So before we end the show, guys, you know my sponsor of the month is the Brooklyn Commons at Bushwick. And I just want to let you guys know that for a limited time, there is an offer of 2 months membership. There's a special deal, 50% off the normal rate for office space at the Brooklyn Commons Bushwick location with a 6 month membership agreement. Again, I've been to this location several times. It's beautiful. If you are interested in co-working space, event space, definitely check out the Brooklyn Commons at Bushwick. And also follow me on social media if you have not done so already, According to RP on IG and on Facebook. And you'll be able to see the sponsorship information for Brooklyn Commons if you are so interested. So thanks again for tuning in, everybody. And we will talk next week.
All right. Thank you so much.
You were listening to According to RP on WJMS Radio.
About time you tuned in.
Tune in each and every Thursday.
I can't wait to come back.
7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
It's all online.